My Grandma Beryl had the most beautiful eyes. Clear, expansive pools of green. Like vast meadows sprinkled with saplings and tiny yellow buttercups. They were wide, bright, and striking. So unique, and the memory of them is so clear in my mind. After her passing in 2019, I was plagued by this reoccurring nightmare. I'm in the hospital where she passed, and my mom comes running into the ward. She's excited and crying tears of unbridled joy. She tells me the most wonderful miracle has occurred. Grandma is coming back to us. Two orderlies follow her into the ward, pushing a hospital bed. On the bed is a black body bag. I stand and watch with horror as they unzip the bag, and my grandma sits up and turns to us. She's in her favorite outfit, and her hair is perfectly styled, and her nails are a fresh shade of pink. My mom is delighted, weeping and jubilant. But as my grandma slowly turns to look at me, I feel the most horrible sensation. Like something evil is wrapping its thorny fingers around my soul. Grandma smiles, but it doesn't touch her eyes. And her eyes are not her eyes. They're dark, deep set, muddy, and piercing. It's Grandma's body, but it's not Grandma. I turn to my mom and tell her this is wrong, unnatural, and ungodly. I want Grandma back, but this isn't Grandma. We don't know this woman, this imposter, this thing. The creature beckons to me. She calls me over and tells me, "It's me. I'm back. It was all a terrible mistake." She reaches for my hand, but I run away, crying because as much as I miss my grandma, I know that this isn't right. I would wake from this dream, sweating, crying, and so very disturbed. Each time I had the dream, the eyes of the imposter changed. It was an intelligent creature. It had impersonated every detail perfectly, but it couldn't master Grandma's elusive eyes. Each night, when the creature reached for my hand, I struggled with the pain of wanting to accept its touch. It wasn't my grandma, but perhaps some version of her was better than nothing at all. I knew it was wrong. I knew she was wrong. I knew this was the work of something dark, sinister, malevolent, and perhaps even demonic. But I missed my grandma. And perhaps a deal with the devil was worth it. I would give anything to have her back. Absolutely anything. One night, when the creature extended its withered hand, as I looked it in the eye, the monstrous pits of its face, I began to extend my own hand, when all of a sudden, I could feel my grandma whispering in my heart, "This isn't me. This isn't right. You know this is wrong." And then I woke up. You can say that these were just nightmares of a grieving granddaughter, a girl suffering with unimaginable pain, loss, and longing. But after the funeral and the subsequent cremation, the dreams stopped. However, the memory of them still haunts me to this day. Maybe it was just a sequence of really bad dreams. But I truly believe something evil was taking advantage of my fragile state and my grandmother's fresh corpse, still on this earth, but no longer with a soul residing in it. I often wonder, what would have happened if I'd let the creature touch me, if I had accepted it, let it in? What if I had made a decision in my dreams that affected my waking world? And is that even possible? Can you touch the devil in your sleep? And if you did, when you woke up, would you just dismiss it as a bad dream?
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments when we find ourselves very much not alone. During episode 11, for Grandma, one of my best friends, Monique, shared a beautiful story about a time when her grandfather, who passed when she was a child, came back to her as an adult to help her reconcile family conflicts. It's a wonderful story of reconnection, understanding, and forgiveness. But today, she shares with us a very different kind of story. This is the story about a girl who realizes that she's not the only one experiencing her private night terrors. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch. Episode 16, Reaching for the Top Hat.
It starts at our Haverhill Apartments in Fullerton, California. We lived in a two-bedroom apartment. We had two girls per apartment.
This apartment was big. Awesome digs for four girlfriends. It was set up as a rectangle. You entered into a large kitchen living room area with big sliding doors at the end of the room that opened up onto a wide balcony. To the left and the right of the living room were twin bedrooms. Monique and our friend Selena had the room on the left. As you entered, you walked into a bathroom suite. There was a door on the right that housed the toilet and the shower, and to the left was their closet and then their bedroom. The room was long, with only one window at the bottom of the room. It was dark. The walls were covered in Jersey Shore and Lil Wayne posters, and there were two desks on the opposite wall at the feet of both of the girls' beds. It was a typical college apartment in 2012.
It was different at night than it was during the day. So the first year I was there, I stayed in one of the rooms, and when I moved in, one of the girls said her mom was a medium and she came in and there were two female spirits in that apartment. And the mom tried to, I guess, cleanse the apartment and extricate them from the area. And I didn't really feel anything that off. And they said this had been a year ago before I moved in. So I didn't think anything of it. But then the following year, I moved into the second bedroom with my friend. And that's when stuff started to go haywire. I have had a history of having night terrors, especially when I am stressed out and I have sleptwalked just around my room, but I didn't think they were incited by anything other than stress until these series of events started to happen.
Full disclosure here, these events happened in our junior and senior year of college. Monique, Selena, and I were a part of an incredibly rigorous Bachelor's of Fine Arts program. And on top of school, rehearsals, shows, and general college partying life, all three of us worked very physically demanding jobs in order to help pay for university. Monday through Fridays were 16-hour days at school. We were busy. I mean, really, really, really busy. But we loved it. Every hectic minute of it. And by our junior and senior year, we were used to the demanding schedules. So, although there was a lot on our plates, it wasn't new. And we thrived in this environment.
So in my room, it was me and then my friend Selena. So she actually witnessed most of what was going on with me, which was the freaky part because we were really able to confirm that this just wasn't my imagination, that I was actually seeing these beings in front of me and it wasn't just my night terrors. A couple of things happened before the major event that really confirmed everything for me. One of them was I, you know, stereotypically saw this woman with grudge type looking hair. So first I felt this pressure by my legs, by around like my knee or my thigh area, like someone was sitting next to me. And I looked up and it was this woman who had short black hair to her shoulders, wet looking, frail, and in like a black dress or garment of some kind, but weathered and just scary looking. Again, I thought it was too stereotypical just because of how scary she looked. I don't remember. I think in that scenario, I think I might have screamed or said something, and then Selena just said, go back to sleep, go back to sleep, because that was Selena's go-to. She knew that I slept, talked, and she just thought that I wasn't lucid and that it was just part of my imagination at that point.
Selena didn't like discussing the activity that was going on in the house, not even to us, her friends. At the time, I remember her saying she didn't want to give whatever the energy was any more time or power than it already had over their lives.
And so as I'm talking to other people about it, people are saying, oh, you know, burn incense, burn sage, have something going on in your apartment. I believe it was the following week I saw the second woman that I saw in this room. I was lying in my bed. I was scared to go asleep. And then all of a sudden I looked up and I see this woman, in contrast to this woman in this black dress with this awful black wet hair that I'd seen. There was this woman in this brunette, seemed to be, you know, very glowing, had this white dress. And then she was holding this bowl and she kind of just ascended into the ceiling. And I was still scared, but she seemed less ominous. And I just kept thinking for days, what is that bowl? What is that bowl? And then I recall like having been brought up Catholic that in churches, they would have these bowls of incense, like they had incense in many different forms. So immediately when that clicked for me, I thought this was this person or this spirit or this being trying to tell me something like, yes, burn incense. The things that you've been hearing like will help you. And so we burned a little bit of incense. By no means did they come from the proper witchy shop that I should have gone to. I'm not even sure where my roommate got these incense sticks or if they did anything. But they were incense sticks nonetheless.
I have no idea what act or ritual Monique and Selena performed in the room. And to be fair, neither do they. However, whatever they did, it did not work.
I woke up and I was kneeling at the end of my bed, reaching out. I didn't know that my body was doing that. To me, when I remember this, when I have this memory, I remember a tall man standing in front of me where, you know, our lamp was, like our tall standing lamp from the floor. And again, it could have been one of those things where, you know, maybe that chair is a pile of sweatshirts, you know, that was a lamppost. So maybe that was just my imagination. But when I woke up the next morning, my roommate told me, Monique, you were kneeling at the foot of your bed with your arms outstretched. And it really freaked me out. And I just had to put you back to sleep. And I said, you know, it's okay, Monique, lie down, lie down. And I had no recollection of doing that. I remember seeing the figure that night. I have no recollection of kneeling at the foot of my bed and reaching out to that person, which is terrifying.
The next day at school, Monique told me this story in our dressing room. I vividly remember Selena sitting in the corner, looking pale and worried. After Monique left the room, Selena turned to me and said, she really scared me last night. It was really troubling to see her reaching out for something or someone.
This other thing happened. It was in the middle of the night. And again, we were on one side of the apartment. There's a living room between us. And then the other bedroom is on the other side of the apartment. So in the dark from my bedroom through the living room, I go over to the room of my other roommates. So I get out of my bed in the dark. I cross the living room in the dark as I'm sleepwalking, and I walk to the other bedroom and I knock on the door, and my roommate opens the door with the light on and says, they were still up and they said, hey, is everything okay? And that's when I remember waking up in that moment. It's strange that in the middle of the night, I would wake up and move and walk away from my room to the other room of the apartment. I'm not sure why I did that. I'm not sure if it was a feeling I was following, but that room was a lot more uncomfortable than any other space in the apartment, for sure.
Were you guys scared to go to bed at night?
Oh, yeah. I think both Selena and I were. She would, you know, have to coax me back to sleep a lot. And it was pretty much a nightly basis that she would have to coax me back to sleep. And I always felt bad and I always thought it was my problem. And when we talked about it the other week, she asked me, don't you remember that night where I was standing over you? And you said, why are you standing there, Selena? And you told me to go back to sleep. And I said, no, I don't remember that. And she said, how could you not? I was terrified the next day when you told me. So what had happened apparently that night was I'd woken up, Selena was standing over me in the dark. So she had gotten out of her bed, walked over to my bed and stood over me. I opened my eyes and see her and I say, Selena, what's up? Or Selena, you know, what's going on? And she says, oh, don't worry. And then Selena walks back to sleep. But that really freaked Selena out because she has no recollection of standing and walking over to my bed and saying those things. And she claims, in my knowledge, I'd never seen her sleepwalk before. So that was pretty scary for us both.
It was now summertime. And we were nearing graduation. But as the semester began to wind down, the activity in the apartment appeared to be ramping up.
So all of these scenarios, I was scared in the moment. I thought that something was weird going on in this apartment, but they were also scenarios that I could explain with, you know, imagination or maybe conversations that I had with people in my mind could have possibly made these up or constructed these in my tired state or in me being stressed out. But the final straw was one night, my roommate and I are in our beds and I'm sleeping on the left side of the room on my bed and her bed is on the right side of the room. And for both of us, at the foot of our bed is our desks. I wake up, I was sleeping. I look up at Selena's desk and I see this man facing away from me. And he's huddled over Selena's desk, rustling papers. He's moving papers back and forth. He's shifting them. Now, something that Selena said was that she called out to me and said, Monique, and I responded, yes. I don't remember that whatsoever. I just remember seeing this guy shifting papers. And then what was terrifying for me was that I vividly remember opening and closing my eyes 2 to 3 times to see if this was real or not. I said, oh, this could be my imagination. I'm just going to close my eyes. I'd reopen it. He'd still be standing there. I did it again. I closed my eyes. I reopened it. He's still standing there. So at this point, I just closed my eyes the last time and I turn a little bit to my side and I just said, you know what? He's not looking at me. He's not bothering me. I'm just going to try to ignore it. And so I believe I lay there for about 30 minutes and then I eventually fall asleep, but I don't open my eyes back open. The next morning, I'm talking to my roommate in the living room and she says, gosh, Monique, what were you doing last night? Like, I just heard you were going through papers and rustling things. Why were you doing that in the middle of the night? And I flipped. I said, you heard it, you heard it. And I had not told her anything at this point. She had heard this man rustling papers at her desk, and I had seen him do it without me having said anything to her. And then our roommate from across the living room is where the second bedroom is. So there's a whole living room between us. She comes out and says, what were you guys doing up late last night? I heard, you know, walking around and, you know, loud noises, what was happening. And both of us were in bed that whole time. And so the fact that without talking to each other about our experiences and having that being confirmed, she heard what I saw, really solidified that, not just that, but all the other things that I had found in that apartment were real and were there. I always thought that she never really believed that it was real, but she told me that she did. She was just terrified and she didn't want to fuel anything that was going on with me. So she tried to, you know, suppress it, but now we don't live there anymore. So now she tells me the open truth. But she said that she called out to me that night and said, "Monique." And then when she heard that my voice was in my bed, that's when she got scared. And that's when she tried to ignore it and go back to sleep, because she said that what she heard was at the foot of her bed at her desk, where I saw the man standing.
Do you think that all of these experiences could have anything to do with the stress of the BFA program?
I think that feeling tired and feeling overwhelmed caused me to be vulnerable, or caused me to be easily awoken, or in a state that is half awake and half asleep. I don't think that the stress or the lack of sleep made me see those things at all.
If it was just Monique and Selena who had had these experiences, perhaps you could explain it away as two overworked and overtired college kids. But the year before Monique even moved into the house, a medium had already expressed that she felt two spirits, both female, and neither one at rest. She said one of them was running around the house frantically, upset that people were in her space, and the other was in the bedroom closet. She was dark and sad. I can speculate for days how a sad, dark energy became trapped in a closet. But that doesn't explain why Monique saw the man in the room. Maybe he wasn't a ghost at all. Perhaps he was something much more malevolent. Monique, do you have any theories as to what was going on in that house?
I watched a documentary on sleep paralysis. And though I never experienced it while I was there, something truly scared me about that documentary, because it stated that multiple people see men or a man with a top hat. And in both scenarios, when I saw the two men, I know that the tall one that was standing at the foot of my bed that I was reaching out at, he definitely had a top hat on. And the one who was shuffling papers at the desk, I remember he had a hat on. I can't remember if it was a top hat or not. But just because that was so specific and so vivid, and I remember it to this day, and then seeing it brought up in the documentary as being something that many people see that represents the devil, that truly scared me. And especially that I was on my knees reaching out to this being at the foot of my bed. I remember being scared of the man hovered over the desk. I don't necessarily remember being scared of the person that I was reaching out to, which is worrisome that you're reaching out to this being that most people have identified as being this evil spirit or this devilish spirit. And I mean, it's, you know, that was 2013, 2012. No one goes around wearing top hats. It's not something that you would normally see or normally encounter in life. So if it was something that my imagination conjured up, why would it conjure that up? I hadn't seen that documentary at that time. I hadn't heard of this theory. It was completely constructed in that moment. You know, why would my brain make up that detail?
Monique's right. She's not alone in seeing a tall, dark man wearing a brimmed hat. People all over the globe have reported seeing him, particularly when they are experiencing sleep paralysis. All the reports detail the same immense fear felt by the dreamers and a sensation of being in the presence of something evil. A lot of research has been done on parasomnia, and there is even a whole category of study dedicated to what sleep scientists call terrifying hypnagogic hallucinations and why they are so similar across the world. But the study continues because we don't know why people from different countries, cultures, and backgrounds are all seeing the same thing. You can say it's coincidence, or you can say it's supernatural. But what's really unsettling is not even the experts can tell you which one it is. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at thewestlondonwitch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Ms. Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.